This is Talk is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. All right, this week, coming up on April 26th is the May Day celebration. So I sat down with Jacob, Reb, and Jackie, of the some of the organizers of the May Day celebration, where we celebrate labor, among other things. I talked to them in the Rose Garden, and you can hear a little bit of rain in there. But that's where I do my interviews. And May Day is, it's a great opportunity to network with all the grassroots organizations in Eugene. So it'll be a wide spectrum of groups there at the May Day celebration on April 26th at the Park Blocks on 8th and Oak here in Eugene. So I just want to say, first of all, no one's calling for a debt jubilee, and I think that's what's going to have to happen here is a debt jubilee when the economy completely crashes because of the unnecessary wars with the wrong people, with the wrong countries. And I just want to, here's another concept that I've been working on. I'm looking for more information on this, and then we'll get to my interview with Jacob. Jackie and Reb about the May Day celebration, April 26th, at the Park Blocks. First of all, the UN General Assembly could send in a peacekeeping force in Gaza to make sure the food aid gets in there. And they could also expel Israel from the UN. And the countries that could really do that are, of course, Britain and France and the other European countries. And I hassle those countries. You know, they've been buying oil from Russia while we're trying to stop the war in Ukraine. And but you know, the thing about Europe is, and this is my own thing, please research this yourself, use your own brain at all times. But see, in Europe, you still have siestas in a lot of countries, and you have unions, and you have environmental regulations. And by the way, if you don't want unions and environmental regulations, there's a really easy way to stop that. Stop exploiting people in the environment, and we might not have so many regulations. But Europe is the place where they have tech regulations too. They have regulations on things, and they don't just let people just walk over them. And they get in the streets when we don't over here. And they even supported us in the No Kings protest. So what I'm saying is that, on the one hand, Britain and France, and when I'm talking about them, I'm really talking about the leadership of Britain and France, not the people of Britain and France. But the reason that, you know, we blew up the pipeline that they were getting oil, the gas pipeline from Russia, and all these things that we do, and the war in Iran, it tends to affect Europe. And the reason that happens is, in my own opinion, the CIA, they do these operations, they have at least three different objectives when they do a major operation. And one of the objectives of all this is to screw up the European economy, where they have a modicum amount of rights, more rights than we do here. And they've pushed for more environmental and labor rights. And, you know, these countries questioned our unnecessary wars with the wrong countries. And that's why they're trying to get them to pay for their weapons. That money is the money that's used for social programs in these countries. And so, they've balked at that. So that's the real reason all this is going on, with total disregard. And this is how currency manipulation works. U.S. foreign economic policy and the central bank's currency manipulation. This is how it's done, with the unnecessary wars with the wrong countries and forcing these countries to pay for weapons that they only are using in wars that are unnecessary and with the wrong countries. And I think that's why you see these, because I'm just going, why would you do that to Europe? Why would you go to a war with Iran knowing that it's going to affect Europe and much more than it affects us here? But it's all going to cause a complete disaster. And the one good thing that's come out of this is we've got, you know, you're hearing more, like I said, when you have an oil shock, you start hearing more people talk about rooftop solar, rooftop solar, rooftop solar, and electric cars and things like that, and energy conservation. Yeah, and so, again, I'm getting reports they're starting to deport IDF soldiers. Israeli Defense Forces have soldiers on leave. So a lot of these countries are deporting them as war criminals. And they're talking about some ambassadors they've deported. I think we should deport the Israeli ambassador, and let's deport some IDF soldiers instead of people that are just coming here to work and to fleeing persecution in their own countries. All right, that's all I got. Check out radioforall.net. That's radio with a number 4, all.net, if you want to hear. And I also am starting a website called djsusd.org that I'll be adding stuff to that. So thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media. All right, so I'm here with the organizers of the May Day Festival. How long has the May Day Festival been going on now?
Well, this current iteration of it has been going on since COVID happened. So this will be the 6th year now. A bunch of different organizations have sort of passed around the responsibility, but we over here in the Neighborhood Anarchist Collective have taken on that mantle, and we've been managing it here for the last couple of years. It's a great opportunity for folks all around the community to come together and celebrate workers.
All right, and so that's what I want to get into. We'll get into our experiences with May Day, what we're talking about, but what is May Day for? What is it? What are you trying to do with this May Day celebration?
Well, what we're trying to do with the May Day celebration is just give a chance for people to come together and celebrate workers. It's a bit of it's a celebration, and for people to organize and get together, and on the leftist side of things, to be able to try to fight for a better world. You can, if you're just coming to it for the first time, we have a bunch of different organizations. Come around to each of their tables, have a good time, have some food, take a look at zines and table materials. If you've got kids, we have a kid area. We have workshops. We have music if you just want to enjoy your afternoon and just sort of find your people that also are fighting to make the world a better place.
And so, the workshops too, you have, you said, anything in particular on the workshops?
Right now, I know there's like a sigil drawing workshop from someone who's interested in that form of magic. So not all of the workshops are strictly leftism related. A lot of them can be more about just things that people are passionate about. Because I do think that's an important part of the celebration as well, is it's not, of course it is about celebrating working people and the oppressed classes, but it's also about having fun together.
That's
and
right.
That in itself is incredibly important as a revolutionary tool, because the
to blow off some steam.
Exactly. I think it's important to say, like, not in an escapist way either, like, this is intentional. This is, so, you know, the world is meant to be drudgery and boring and anxiety inducing, and we're saying we're going to have a maypole and live music.
That's right.
It's kind of energy, focusing energy from, and bringing energy in from a bunch of positive people that are trying to do something positive.
Right.
Because it's not just labor, the tabling people are not just going to be labor there. There's all kinds of, you're going to find all kinds of grassroots organizations there.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, the original May Day was born out of an organizing effort that was going on that included, obviously, anarchists, but it included socialists, it included people from other leftist groups, and also just working class people that had previously not thought of themselves as being radical or political, but wanted to get involved in this. And so we're kind of mirroring that in a way, by bringing in all these different leftist groups, kind of in commemoration of that too.
So I thought the maypole was a fertility dance. I didn't connect the maypole with May Day at all.
I will try to get that question maybe answered. Is that It just so happened that, yes, like Reb was talking about, this Haymarket riot or massacre or affair, whatever you want to call it, did happen on May the 4th. And May Day was already being celebrated in Europe since way before Christianity came to Europe as a fertility festival. May is this the halfway point between the spring equinox and the summer solstice, and its spring is in full flower, and it is a celebration of that abundance of life and fertility. That, yes, it is time to get pregnant. It's time to rejoice in abundance, and the maypole is absolutely part of that. The Puritans banned them, so that's how you know it's good.
Right. Well, and I just got to say, too, here's something. Other cultures used to have a way for people to meet people. I mean, there's a loneliness epidemic right now, and this is where we used to have, in paganism especially, would make sure that you weren't alone. You couldn't survive if you were alone back in the day, you know, so cultures developed these things so that we would meet each other and not go through life alone.
I'd say that it's not just back then. You can't go through life alone without a community, without people. I mean, that's not a life worth living. Mm-hmm. You know, so getting together and you know, and having an opportunity to you know, celebrate and have a good time. And one of the reasons that the maypole has, you know, different organizations, different sort of slogans written on the individual ribbons is because it's all these sort of different strains of trying to make the world a better place, wrapping up together into a cohesive whole. So, you know, we may all have different ideas on how exactly we want to see the better world that we all dream for, but if we can pull together, you know, or at least tolerate each other, we can get a lot closer.
But I mean, what I'm getting at is that's why this is so important, is because it's getting fewer and fewer opportunities to network with other people socially as well as actively. Mm-hmm. So this is another reason why the May Day conference is very important.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay, so let's get into labor. So what? Let's go all the way back to the king. Labor has been against the king. This is why we got to have the Magna Carta, wasn't it? It's because labor has always been not underrepresented and always being has been exploited for as long as there's been labor.
Sure.
Right. Absolutely. As I think Karl Marx said it the best, that history has never been anything except the struggle between the oppressors and the oppressed.
Absolutely
true, and this is a day where we celebrate the oppressed over the oppressors, who get celebrated every other day.
And this includes, you know, and then this includes wars that the poor are always the ones that go and fight the rich man's war. Mm-hmm. So am I being flippant? Is that accurate?
No, that's absolutely the truth. Yeah. You know, and
so Serge Tankian said that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so and newspapers too. There used to be a labor section in newspapers, and I don't think there is a labor section in any newspaper now that I know of.
That's right. And one of the things that we do offer at May Day, and we have in prior years, are different, you know, journalistic, you know, outlets. You know, Dissident Times, your own
double-sided media.
You know, a lot of different folks, you know, trying to, because there's news out there, it's just not getting told by the mainstream media. So, you know, appreciate your efforts in making sure that your listeners hear about this fantastic event as well. And it's a good way to find out, you know, in our fragmented society, where like-minded folks are working and doing things.
Well, because you brought it up, so just now, I'm noticing on NPR, which is supposed to be a leftist radio station, they're not giving you any solutions to Gaza or the Iran war. They're just telling you all the bad news, but not telling you what you can do about it.
That's right.
This is what's different about the May Day celebration, is these are groups that are doing something about it.
That's right.
Disagree that NPR had ever been classified as leftist. I would call them liberal.
Thank you. Yeah,
at the best, and at the worst, enlightened centrist. Moderate. Now, sure, they'll call anything leftist.
Yeah.
Anything to the left of hunting the homeless for sport is communism.
Organizing labor, that's another point that I want to make, is the people that they're calling communists, I notice, and I'm kind of a history buff, and what they're calling radical communists are people that are just organizing to get better pay and better working conditions.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And these are turned into communists that we need to destroy, and what it's in, they even use the American Legion here Washington. The Centralia Massacre was they used the American Legion to shut down the I think it was the woodworkers union.
So a really interesting segue here would be the Haymarket affair and the 8 anarchists who were arrested and 7 who were sentenced to death over this uprising of leftists demanding this like absolutely unbelievable communist heresy was the 8-hour workday.
That's right.
Which is now so commonplace and so accepted into mainstream capitalist America that the 9-to-5 is it's a trope, it's a saying, it's a Dolly Parton song. It's also inched back to be an 8-to-5 now. We lost some ground.
Well, whereas at the time they wanted you to work 6 days a week, 20 hours a day, I don't think I'm exaggerating, and repent on Sunday.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm exaggerating. And then there was, of course, child labor, and so all of these have been advanced by people like you're going to find at the May Day celebration.
That's right.
Right.
Is that right?
And I think there's also this tendency to just look at it and say, like, the fight's over.
Yeah.
Because there are things like the 8-hour workday that the average liberal has just accepted and said, yes, this is fine and this is good. Don't ask for anything else. You got what you wanted back in 1886, and we're done. Labor history is over. We have the rights.
But I noticed this is going on with transgender people. I was at a thing with transgender, and me, if I'm getting insurance from a company, I want, not only does, if I had a wife and kids, I want them covered, but I want my insurance to cover a transgender person that I have nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's me. All right. That's my money. I want my money, my benefits to go to a wide range of people, not just me and my wife and kids. All right, so Haymarket, though, Joseph Conrad book is called The Secret Agent. And he's actually, if you read the preface to The Secret Agent, my impression is that he had inside information that the police were involved in the Haymarket bombing.
Mm.
At least, if not indirectly or directly. And this is, you know, the World Trade Center, too. I don't want to go off on too far off of labor, but we had it going on with the World Trade Organization. We had just done the battle in Seattle, and we were winning and making people realize that corporations were messed up. And right away, they have a 9/11 happens, and we have a war, and that just ruined the whole thing. So, for me, in my own opinion, it seems like they if they don't facilitate it themselves, they actually let it happen. The Haymarket Square, I think they let it happen.
I believe that it was a police officer that threw the dynamite. They're the ones that had been perpetuating violence. They had just the day before killed 4 of these people, of these striking workers. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who have a history of doing that. So I find it hard to believe that people who came to a peaceful gathering and brought their children there were not planning to use violence and are not that kind of people. So I believe that they did it, and of course to discredit the movement, to derail the movement.
All right, and so you guys are too young to have lived during the Reagan administration, but one of the things they came out with was we have the welfare mother, that we need to stop her. She's just sitting at home drinking beer and smoking cigarettes. And I've just come out with, you know, I would rather my tax dollars go to someone that is smoking cigarettes and drinking beer at home, because I'm going to see that money. That money might come back to me, whereas when I give money to war or multinational corporations, that money gets sucked out of the economy and I never see it again. So I know I'm stretching the labor issue here, but you understand what I'm getting at is there's a whole extractive situation in labor.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you can elaborate on that.
I think I'll take this maybe in a different direction than you were going for. We're saying the working class a lot. We're saying working class, we're saying labor. And I just want to be abundantly clear that all of the rights and joy that we are fighting for apply to people who can't work and won't work and don't work. Anyone who's disabled, anyone who just is not going to ever be able to hold a job. In the capitalist sense of work is also, I would say, included in this is why I'm trying to say, like, the common people or oppressed classes versus, like, the working class. Because I think, yes, absolutely. I think if there's, you know, people like to talk about how, like, immigrants are just here to work real hard. And, like, some of them might be playing video games in their parents' basement, and that's also fine. Like, they don't have less of a right to be here just because they're not doctors.
Right, that's my thing, too, is I shouldn't be, if my freedom shouldn't be attached to how much work I do.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have to be, it shouldn't be that I'm only as free as how much work I do.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
And part of the definition of work, you know, I think Engels talked about this a little bit way back when, and folks since then a lot more. But, you know, in terms of maintaining a home, in terms of interacting with the community, in terms of doing so many other things, that's all work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the labor that we do isn't just what we do in exchange for money.
Right.
You know what I mean? Shoot, you know, being out here, I don't think any of us are being paid to be out here, but this is work. You know what I mean?
Right,
like, fighting to make the world a better place is definitely work.
Doing still waiting on my Soros money.
Ah, there you go. There you
going
go.
Down to the city council and doing your that's civic right. duty is right. really required for a democracy.
And yeah, and like we were saying before, that you can't do things, you know, all on your own. It's only because we have people that we work with, that mm-hmm. we spend time with, that are able to, you know, help lift us up in all the different ways that we're able to do any of this. Because if we were just trying to do any of this on our own, we wouldn't get very far. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, it's not very effective being a communist of one, you know what I mean? Like, the whole point, or a union of one, you know, the power comes from lots of people working together, doing different things to get us to where we want to be.
Well, so you brought up unions. Another point that I make is that there's a guy named George Seldes was a muckraker, a muckraker's muckraker was what he was known as, and he said that, you know, the Manufacturers Association, there's the Grocery Store Owners Association, these are all, the Steel Owners Association, the Railroad Association, these are all unions for multinational corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So how come they're allowed to collude and decide things together, but when we do it, the army has to be brought out?
No. You want to really open a can of worms, we can talk about the police union.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they're the ones making the rules. You know, they're the ones who has developed the system to be tilted in their favor. So no wonder they're able to do things that are, you know, classified as illegal for working class folks like us.
Who are you talking about? The associations?
Yeah, associations or the, you know, the police unions or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's like, I forget who said this, but, you know, yeah, you better believe in class war. You're already in one. And the other side's already organized and mobilized and winning. But what we got to do is get ourselves organized so we can fight back in a way while keeping each other afloat.
But
we
but
got
who,
the people.
But so who are the real communists, though? The Manufacturers Association members, or you and me trying to unionize for better work? I'm saying this to a conservative person. Unions are really not communist at all. They are part of a capitalist system.
It depends on the union, you know? So, yeah.
I see the point that you're making.
Yeah,
The true communism is these cobbles of industrialists and warmongers.
They're being sponsored by the state.
Absolutely.
And we are not being sponsored by the state.
Back to your bringing up the very racist image of the welfare queen of Ronald Reagan's day.
Yeah.
What's a welfare queen besides a corporation waiting for a bailout?
That's right.
Like, what's a welfare queen except the military industrial complex, except, the State of Israel standing with its hand open for more money for bombs.
Or you can start a war without talking to anybody.
Right.
Yeah, that's that is real welfare, in my own opinion.
Sure.
All right, so the other concept is that these things that we've won, like healthcare and the working week and the minimum wage, what was life like before those things happened? I mean, there was disease everywhere, and we were relying on the church. They left it to the church to fix all these, and it was like Dickinsonian. If you read Dickens, there was filth in the streets and disease.
True.
So all this, you're better, even wealthier people, which I wish there were no, we should have no class at all, but even wealthier people, this affects them. It's to their advantage to have a good working class,
right.
a healthy working class.
At least clean, right? At least sanitary.
The thing that really breaks my heart is that when you take a look at the fact that, you know, here we are extracting so much wealth from, you know, the rest of the world here, us here in the United States, but we can't even manage to, you know, clothe and house and feed everybody. You know, that is a deliberate policy choice when you look at it. Because we have the money. Right now, we're spending more money than anybody else in the whole world per capita on healthcare, and we still can't manage to, you know, give everybody healthcare?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty absurd. You know, right now, we have empty houses, empty buildings, appreciating value, and people living on the streets. What kind of sense does that make? Not a lot, you know, in my eyes.
Well, if that were to continue, the wealthy would just have to retreat into their gated communities.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's why Elon wants to go to Mars.
There you go, yeah. Right, or all the people, you know, setting up bunkers in New Zealand, right. You know, that sort of thing.
You know, I was talking to Todd Boyle, and I keep going off on tangents, I know, but, you know, I really think that the only reason they haven't blown up the world is because they wouldn't have anybody to order around.
Right.
If they killed us all, they wouldn't have anybody to order around. And I don't think, I wonder if there's some science on that anywhere, but...
I don't know.
Well, they need us.
Yeah.
And capitalism does something to our souls, and it's done something different to theirs than what it's done to ours. And what it's done to them is somehow taken away their concept of empathy. They don't seem to have any empathy for us. Mm. They just want us in good working condition. We're equipment to them. And so they want their equipment clean, and they want it to
and
last a long
whatever,
time.
Women to rape or have sex with or whatever, too.
That, yeah.
It's just the fact that they can dominate.
Exactly.
Yeah. So...
One of our biggest issues facing our community right now is the ICE raids.
Yes,
and
yes.
You'll see protesters at the federal building frequently about the brutality that's happening on this level of state violence that's just escalating. And talking about immigration and workers who are immigrant workers. And I want to talk about that because Rep was mentioning the scapegoating of the anarchists specifically.
Yeah.
And I want to point out as well that, yes, the 8 people arrested for the bomb at Haymarket were anarchists. And 3, 4, 5 of them were German immigrants. And a 6th was an American-born child of German immigrants.
Yep.
Only one was a U.S.-born citizen, and another was from England. And the stereotypes around German immigrants at the time sound very familiar to what you'll hear about our South and Central American neighbors. Well, you know, they're good people, they're hard workers, but, you know, they live in their own neighborhoods, they speak their own language, they cook their own food, they, you know, they just don't integrate the way that we want to see. And, you know, some of them, sure, most of them are good, clean, decent people, good, hard workers, but some of them have these real dangerous ideas, and they're bringing danger, and they're bringing disease, and they're bringing drugs into our country, and they're bringing communism. And I think that's really important to talk about in the context that we're living in.
Well, and so those would be considered white people in a way, too. And
today, yes, absolutely.
Compared to now, there
was an othering that was happening. This absolutely, like, race being this dream and whiteness being kind of a monolith that you can accept people into or reject people from.
At
the time, not white enough.
Yeah.
And
food smelled funny.
Well, and Upton Sinclair talked about this, too. They pitted the Irish against the Russians in the meatpacking industry. This is... They've constantly pitted anything they can, any difference. It doesn't even matter if it's race. They can find some difference to exploit you, to pit you against the other workers. They will do it. So they have a history of doing this.
That's what they do.
Let's play you and him fight. It's one of the oldest tactics of colonialism. Why we have Catholics and
Protestants.
While
we run away to the bank.
Yeah, of course.
What
yes.
Carlin says.
This is important to me to talk about May Day being a holiday that was originally created by immigrants, mm-hmm. and that it needs to continue to be a holiday where we celebrate the immigrants in our community and do our very best to protect against the onslaught of state violence and of...
Well, I did want to sweeten the pot a little bit, talking about some of the other workshops that we've been in negotiation trying to get ready to go for here. We have self-defense workshops, and we also have a workshop on first aid and because right now in our community we've been seeing the feds at the courthouse gas people in the community pretty much indiscriminately with CS gas and pepper balls and other sort of less lethal ammunition. Then there are ways to help deal with that and help take care of each other in the community if you end up getting caught in that. So if you're interested in finding out more information, we have workshops, and we'll be putting out our schedule for that for here too long.
When I noticed they're training transgender and gay people, self-defense, because they need it, because there's an increased need for that, because they're being oppressed. Why are they being oppressed more now?
It feels like they're being targeted, you know? And also, it's just, what I've been seeing is it just feels like if they can, it's like they take the people that they perceive as being the most on the outside, or the people that they have some sort of grudge. A lot of cases, it's people, police, they target the people that make them the most upset, you know? And targeting oppressed folks, I mean, that's police and state violence 101. It's like we were talking about with, dividing and conquering. Mm-hmm. It's just one to split off, the T from LGBT, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
divide and conquer again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... Well, because this isn't Pleasantville, though. We don't... It's ironic, because we don't want to go back to the 50s. What's strange is the 50s were when the GI Bill... We had a prosperous country because of the GI Bill, because of Keynesian economics, is why we had a prosperous time that they all hearken back to. But they think it... But they blame it on labor and these minority groups instead, that are anybody that's different than you.
Well, I mean, we had strong unions back then, so that was a big reason why things were better for some folks, but not for everybody. But, instead of trying to hearken back to a half-imagined, past, I say we build a brighter future. There's certainly enough ways that we can do that. It's a target-rich environment for making the world a better place, is one of the things I always say.
Okay, so what does a classless society look like? Will there be any... We can have a little bit of... I mean, trade has been a part of human culture since... We're not saying to get rid of trade completely, are we?
Yeah.
And, what would a classless society look like? Is there still conspicuous consumption? Marx wasn't against conspicuous consumption. He was just...
Lots of people have thought about this in lots of different ways. One of the ways that I like to think about it is that, what I want is a society where everybody's basic needs... healthcare, housing, food, shelter, everything else like that are taken care of. If there's one thing that, capitalist style things work pretty well on, it's luxury goods.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, if people want to have some sort of capitalist, system where they're, figuring out how to allocate resources like, movies or something like that. That's fine. Or like gems or fancy jewelry. Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I mean, even Native Americans had headdresses and jewelry that were just for decoration. So there's nothing, just in moderation, and as long as it's not exploiting someone to get it.
Yeah, and the key is, like, we could do that after we've, gotten the basic needs for everybody.
Yeah.
That sort of thing's fine, but not while we have folks living on the streets, starving to death, dying of exposure. Here in the country that's extracting wealth from all over the world. It's not the kind of world that... Certainly not how I'd set it up.
But so how would all this be paid for? This is all doable, right? We don't have to base our economy on oil like in the in Norway and things like that. That type of socialism, we're not really talking about. We're talking about ground up, classless society.
Sure.
So can you give me
the biggest corporations who are exploiting people and creating this inequality would no longer exist in an anarchist or a classless society. Yeah. It would break down into much smaller groups of people exchanging goods in some way, whether or not they have a currency, you know, that would be yet to be decided. But if we get rid of the institutions, the governments that are propping these guys up and allowing them to exploit us and they're quelling any dissent, that would go away and things would be distributed, not in a perfectly equal way, that's impossible to do, but they would be distributed in much more equitably.
A little bit about socialism, though. We're not talking about, so what about incentive? As a doctor, I'm not saving a patient because I get paid more money. And as a scientist, I'm not inventing something because of the money. Einstein didn't die wealthy. He wasn't a wealthy man. I mean, even Bill Gates, I don't think he expected to be as rich as he is, even. Yeah. So what about incentive? Do we need...
He could stop being as rich as he is.
Anytime
he wanted to. Just throwing that out there. Bill, if you are listening, it's not too late to give up your billions.
Well, who should he give his billions to?
I think that's a really good question, and I'm glad that I'm not in the position of having to answer that. And I have no shame in saying that, you know, when people ask, like, well, what about this and what about that and what's your society going to look like, I have absolutely no problem telling them, like, I have not gotten that far yet. We're at a very, we're much earlier stage of dealing with the problem of capitalism than all of that.
Well, you know, I am trying to ask you things that a conservative would ask you.
Of course. Because,
so that we can
And that's what I would tell a conservative.
Because, for instance, two things. First of all, how often do people change their economic status? You're not going to become a multimillionaire. No. Probably not going to become a multimillionaire.
Right. The old saying that, you know, you're always three bad months away from being on the street, but you're never three good months away from being a billionaire.
That's right.
But they genuinely believe, many conservatives genuinely believe, that they are just a year or two away from millionaire or even billionaire status.
Right. And that's why they don't want these regulations, these pesky regulations.
They're delusional. Absolutely. And so they're voting against their own self-interest due to, like, this delusionally imagined future that they're not going to have.
And it's in Critical Path, Buckminster Fuller. They would actually make more money when they paid their workers more money. They did a study on GM, and they would actually make more money by paying their workers more. What about this concept, too? You know, I know when we empower women, the birth rates tends to go down. What if we give everybody, if everybody has food and clothes and housing, aren't they going to just multiply? Aren't we just going to have an overpopulation and wouldn't that just ruin everything?
That's not what's happened in all of the world. As quality of life goes up, y'all in families, and it's not just women, it's everybody in families, you tend to go from really large families because, well, gosh, I don't know if my kids are going to die. You know what I mean? So instead of having a whole bunch of kids, you tend to have a fewer number of kids. Do you focus in on them more?
Right. The reason you're having kids is because a percentage of them are going to die because there are no services. Mm-hmm. And that was in the Middle Ages, not in an age where we have science that can solve these problems.
I mean, take a look at, even just in America, you know, the declining birth rates all around the world, you know, and we'd end up at a more reasonable equilibrium. Just take a look at the projections. It's going to hit a peak and then it'll level off or decline to a plateau and,
the population.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
It's not a constantly increasing exponential situation.
So what do we do? What can someone do? They're talking about a general strike. The head of the United Auto Workers, his name escapes me, talked about a general strike in 2028. Is he talking about a one-day strike or is he talking about, do we want people to... get rid of their chains, right? We don't want them to go back to work.
That is a great question. I think that yes, a true 24-hour strike, like a genuine 24-hour general strike, would be astonishing for what it could do in terms of utterly sabotaging the everything. I think we would get what we any if we had a list of demands that would be met really quickly. If we had, oh no, we go to the hospital. Sorry, the doors are locked. We're not working today. You call 911. My house is on fire. There's no one to answer. No one is coming. Like, they would figure that out real quick. But I don't think that's realistic to have 100% participation in a general strike. And that's what I think would be the... If you're looking for, like, a one-day shutdown, that would be more... Like, it would need almost full participation. But I'm looking for a percentage here while I'm blathering, because someone has actually done the math on this.
Well, I will say, it only takes 5% of a population to make a movement is well known. So if you think it's hopeless, just go to your May Day celebration and get with some people, and you'll see how not hopeless it is.
3.5% of the population. That would be 11 million Americans. That's the statistic that the general strike movement is throwing around.
Oh, that's all you need to make a change. So what change would that make? That would get us to the negotiating table to...
But I know this has worked, like, really well. I think Iceland had a solid general strike at one point, and that can at least get your demands heard. But I think it's important, to have your list of demands before go in at that point.
Yeah. And it causes economic destruction. Mm-hmm. That's the...
Do you remember when that boat got lodged in the Suez Canal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it cost, like, $6 million a day?
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
I mean, that's basically what's happening right now in the Strait of Hormuz. But the point is that to be able to accomplish anything, along these lines, you're going to have to find like-minded people, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to get organized with them and figure out who you can work with. And a great way to do that is to come to the May Day celebration mm-hmm. and meet with folks and see who you can tolerate working with, who you can have a joyful time mm-hmm. trying to make the world a better place with. Because it's like, it's the whole Rosa Luxemburg, bread and roses thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you want to have fun, and you also want to do the hard work. So come have fun with us out here. It'll be the 26th of May. Of April at the Park Blocks, 8th and Oak, where the Saturday market is. But it'll be on Sunday, so you can park on the streets. We'll have food. We'll have live music. Workshops, you name it.
Right, taillight repair or bicycle repair?
Oh, yeah. We'll see if the bicycle repair fair folks will be able to make it out there. One of the programs we have in NAC is the taillight repair folks, mm-hmm. and hopefully we'll be able to have them out there too. And we will additionally have the free store.
Yes.
The little mini free store that we have, much like with the share fairs that we have every quarter as well. So we'll have... That is a totally free market.
A really free market.
Really free market, that's right.
You don't even have to trade.
No, take what you need.
Yeah, that's mutual aid for you. It's folks getting what they need. Yeah, we live in a land of plenty. Folks should be able to have enough so they can at least get by. Yeah.
That's what I want to talk about is there's an anarchist view of all this. And let me give you an example. There's a movie called Meet John Doe. It's a Capra film, and... I think it's Gabby Hayes in there. He has a line where he says he's a bum. He's a street guy that they're gonna get him into this political thing. And he says, "Give me a fishing pole and a few canned goods, and I'm good to go."
Mm-hmm.
In other words, how long should we be working? I should be able to work for like 8 hours a week and still get basic. I should get the basic stuff, and then if work 8 hours a week just to get some luxury items. Where is all this work coming from? There's all this stuff. How long would it take for the stuff to run out, do you think, if we just had a free store all the time? How would that work in the long term?
So, I don't think we would run out. As the person who's personing the free store most of the time, one of the hardest things about that task is to get people to accept that they're able to take things.
Yeah.
They will. It's not a free-for-all where people are just grabbing and running. People will come up and say, well, yes, I need a pair of shoes, but what if someone else comes along and they need them more than I do? And a lot of what I do is convince people, like, well, these fit you, and your old shoes really do look like they've seen better days. Why don't you just take them? Because I don't see that other person who also wears an 8.5 and is going to be here today. So that's, I don't think that you will see that the rush of people who don't want to do anything but want to take everything. I think you'll see the proportion shift much in the other direction of people who want to give.
Right, and people don't, that isn't their motivation. They're not doing things for money. They're doing things for the enjoyment of it. And some people enjoy knitting and sewing. Oh, yeah. And is there a mending workshop?
Oh, yeah. Mending workshops are at our at our share fairs always. With it being outside, we might not have as extensive as of a mending and repair table at May Day. But we'll see. It'll depend on how folks want to, you know, organize their time and their labor. Going back to thinking about you know, work days and everything else too, I'd posit that for a lot of folks, you know, working many jobs or the whole gig economy thing going on, with you know, patching together three or four different jobs to be equal to the, you know, the full work day. I don't know. I've worked in a lot of offices in my time, and a lot of the time that you spend in an office isn't time spent doing your work.
Right.
You know, like, why not have a system where you wouldn't have to have, you know, folks sitting at a desk twiddling their thumbs or, you know, not working, you know, and instead have people working, putting their time and effort into things that bring them joy, you know? Have a certain amount of basic necessity that you need to get done, and then have a surplus on top of that. Have the surplus go to the worker instead of go to the boss.
Yes. I mean, even the garbage man, too, who, by the way, should be the highest paid employee in a real society. They're the most important person in society. But there might even be someone that wants to pick up the garbage. And I know I've seen people that go out there with a metal detector and have fun picking up garbage. So
I know my dad. Yeah, my dad worked as a garbage collector up in up in Alaska, and he did it seasonally, and he absolutely loved it. You know, it's you're outside, you get to move your body. You know, it's having a variety of things that you do, and having options. You know, that's a way to, you know, keep on enjoying your work and enjoying your life. Anyway,
well, and, there's always the guy at every job I've had. There's always the guy, and sometimes it was me that did more than he was supposed to, and you can do that too, right? You can go work more if you want, but
people tend to be happier if they're not working for the enrichment of some boss somewhere, but instead working for the benefit of everybody.
Right, that's right,
now,
a middleman.
Yeah, right now, you know, one of the I work with a lot of nonprofits as well, and I, you know, the fact that you're paid less just because you're not actively making the world worse, that's all backwards to me. If you're doing something that makes the world a better place, you should be getting better compensation for it, as opposed to doing, I don't know, extracting, you know, toxic chemicals from the ground or burning things or cutting down forests or making the world a worse place. Well, maybe you shouldn't be being paid a surplus. You know what I mean? So, anyway, there's a lot of ways that the world could be made better.
Right, and those jobs are just making one person wealthy. That's right. They're they're not benefiting the entire society. So,
that's
again,
right.
This isn't communism. We're just trying to do only what we need to do.
Sure.
Well, and I ask people that question a lot. Like, if you did not have to work anymore to live, would you still want to work? And almost everyone I ask this says yes, but not here. I would want to do, you know, something else. I would want to spend, you know, 12 hours a week doing this thing that I love, or this providing this service to the community. So
goodness knows, we all know plenty of people who should be retired, but they keep going into work because that's what they love to do.
Right.
You know, I could think of people in my very own family doing that right now.
I brought notes with, like, the whole history of the Haymarket Riot, if anyone wants to hear that.
Well, yeah. What is the history of May Day? It was before, long before the Haymarket.
Well, yeah, like we were saying, like, it was a sort of a pagan roots holiday in Europe, and that's kind of why. It was just sort of coincidental that the Haymarket affair happened to coincide with that. So
Spring is also a time of rebirth and regeneration.
Of course.
So it's also a good time for revolution and making the world a better place.
It's warm. Let's get outside, comrades.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, just quick and dirty. The Haymarket Affair happened on May 4th, 1886 in Chicago. As my comrade was saying, it was the culmination of a general strike that had already been going on since May 1st, and two people had been killed the day before at another rally. The police came to disperse a crowd at the Haymarket Square, and somebody, we do not know who, that's a theory that's working at this table. I'm not going to comment. Someone threw a dynamite bomb, and the cops immediately opened fire on the crowd, and the crowd opened fire back. Some of them were carrying as well. Ultimately, 7 police officers, 4 workers were dead, dozens more injured. This has been called a riot. It's been called a massacre. Mostly people call it the Haymarket Affair. 8 anarchists were scapegoated. 7 were sentenced to death and 1 to a prison sentence. As I mentioned, 5 of those 8 were German immigrants. 6th was American-born to German immigrant parents. Only 2 of the 8 arrested suspects were present at the time that the bomb was thrown.
Yep.
One of them, Parsons, turned himself in because he knew that everyone had such rock-solid alibis that there was no way this case was going to progress. So he turned himself in out of solidarity to stand trial with his comrades, and he was hanged by the state of Illinois.
What, like 8 of them were hung with him?
Ultimately, only 6. There were some pardonings. One did end his own life in prison.
That's right.
Option.
Yeah, he won.
Rather than letting the state do it. And then in 1889, it was commemorated as International Workers' Day in Paris, at this big confluence of all the socialists and the Marxists and the anarchists and et cetera, at the Second International.
That's right. All right, I have one more thing and then I'll wrap it up. Going to how would this work, okay? Mm-hmm. Let me just give you an example of that. The co-op model, what the anarchists are talking about is a co-op model, where, because you're talking about the middleman, and that's what our society, what Marx was talking about, is the bourgeoisie class is extracting all this stuff. They're a middleman that is extracting this. And first of all, healthcare, for one thing, it would actually be advantageous to businesses if we had a healthcare co-op that everyone pooled all their money into.
Yep.
But what a co-op is it's run by the people that use the services, the goods and services that come out there. So that's how you would decide who did what and how much work each person would do. Is you would have a committee on the co-op that decide of people that this affects, not a group of people that profit from it, but a group of people that use the services and want the most efficient use out of the goods and services. So that would be the model, and whether you believe in capitalism or communism or not, you're cutting out the middleman that is just sucking all this profit off,
right?
That, which is what Marx was talking about. That pile keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the only place they can't make savings in the material goods that are going into things. The only place they can make a savings is by paying people less money.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody agrees with that.
Yep. Trimming from the wrong segment there.
For sure. What?
Yeah, so you gotta cut your costs somehow, so we cut it from the wages we're paying to the workers.
Right.
Rather than this person who's doing pretty much nothing.
But yeah. Smith said you need those people, they're the ones buying your product, so you should pay them enough to be able to buy your product. Ford said the same thing. So
okay, there you go.
This is all basic stuff. All right, anything else that I haven't covered? So please go to the... What's happening? What did we do? It's on the... Why is it on the 26th?
Oh, so last year we had it on May the 4th, which is actually Haymarket Day. And that was great because we kind of were seeing it as a culmination event. Like, we would have these little lead-up events. We would have film nights. We would have discussion panels. And then we would have the big party at the end. And that was fine. Mm-hmm. But I think this year the idea is, like, we're going to have a kickoff party. Like, Sunday, April 26th. 12 to 5 Park Blocks, we are having the party that is going to kick off your May Day week.
Yeah.
And after that, we're going to see May 1st. We're going to see, hopefully, much, much more than that. We're going to see people hosting their own events and other orgs.
So May Day becomes a more of a two-week event with a chance for everyone to network and get out of the...
Keep it going all month, all year. Just make it last forever.
There we go. There we
all
go.
You have to lose is your chains.
Yeah, May Day every day. That's what I say.
So April 26th, noon to 5 at the Park Locks between 8th and Oak.
Yep.
And then what's happening on the 1st? I thought there was something conflicting on May 1st.
May 1st,
it's
I know
Friday,
that's,
right?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. I know that there's other events in the works from Labor, and if you want to find out more about that, come to the May Day celebration. You'll find out all about it there.
All right. I didn't get any of your names, but that's okay. Did you want to give your names and what organization you're with? Or
I'm Lucy. I organize with the Neighborhood Anarchist Collective.
And I'm Jacob. And I also organize with the Neighborhood Anarchist Collective. But I do all kinds of things all over the community.
Yeah, I'm Reb. I'm also with the Neighborhood Anarchist Collective.
Anyone who wants to get involved does need to go through an onboarding process. So if that's something that you're interested in, please visit us at neighborhoodanarchist.org, and there's a contact form. You can fill out a request for onboarding.
Yep.
Just give us your email and we'll meet up with you.